Blog Talk Radio.
On a dirt road with my dad, we're talking about life. At a sunset, looking at the brangest cows and wood ducks in the sky. Well, it's home, sweet home, where the Crimson Tide plays football and the leaves change in the fall.
So much media, so little time. Who keeps track of it all? That would be me. This is Bob Andelman, and this is a Mr. Media interview. You know, MrMedia.com, MRMedia.com. Come on by and check us out. And the show, of course, is brought to you today on the iPhone, Android, Palm, and BlackBerry by the Stitcher app for mobile devices. And it's also available on iTunes, free of charge. Mr. Media is also sponsored by thepartyauthority.us. Planning a wedding, mitzvah, or corporate event? For any and all occasions, call the Party Authority nationwide at 1-800-DIAL-DJS. That's 1-800-342-5357, where one call does it all. So where was I before the commercial? Oh, yeah. Mr. Media is recorded live from the new media capital of the world and hometown of the Henry Paul Band and the Outlaws, Tampa Bay, Florida. I'm going to tell you a story that, unless you've heard it before, you'll likely think is a product of my imagination. But it's not. It's 100% true. Ray Johnston is at the center of this tale. Today, he's the lead singer of the Ray Johnston Band, which is the subject of a new 10-part HDNet cable TV series called, are you ready? Ray Johnston Band, Road Diaries. New episodes air Sunday nights on HDNet. Now, you may ask yourself, well, that's another band, right? Anyway, you may ask yourself, why would I want to watch a TV show about a country band that I've never heard of? That's a fair question, I think. Now, probably for the same reason I invited Ray on this show. It's a wonderful story of passion, grit, athleticism, musical talent, heartbreak, and medical miracles. And frankly, now that I've said that, it's amazing that the show is produced by Mark Cuban and not Oprah Winfrey. But we'll get to that later. And let's start at the beginning. Ray Johnston loved basketball. It was his passion, and his goal as a child was to make that his life. Now, from here, I'll let his mother and Ray tell you more.
He would leave all these notes on my mirrors and things. And I even have a little sheet where he wrote his little autobiography saying, I will play pro ball. I will.
But I just had a passion for the game of basketball. And so I went and walked on at the University of Alabama. And then I didn't make the NBA out of college, but kept playing.
From County Road 5, I came to the city lights.
It just so happened we played a Hoop It Up tournament at the American Airlines Center in the top division.
We had had an open tryout, and we had sent out scouts, Tony Nelson and Kiki Vanderway, to identify talent that we thought had at least a chance to play in the NBA, and Ray was one of the first guys that they picked out, and they brought him into summer league.
As the training camp progressed, it was clear that there was something more to Ray than just a basketball player. He had a huge heart, and everyone seemed to gravitate towards his leadership.
Really, Ray was the only guy that stood out to me, you know, as far as the new guys coming in with the summer league, and I just noticed that he was a real feisty guy on the court. You know, he gave me a lot of trouble, you know, and he was an undersized two guard.
So Donnie Nelson came up to me at the last day and said, congratulations, Ray. You made our team fair and square. And he said, you made it because you're a winner. Congrats, man.
It's a really unique deal because Ray literally walked out of the office into that three-on-three competition. And then less than a month later, he's in a Maverick uniform.
Ray Johnston, welcome to Mr. Media.
Can you hear me all right?
I can hear you just fine,
all
Ray.
Right.
How are you?
I'm definitely from the South. I was listening to you. I didn't know if I was a guest or I was going to get to speak. Country come to town. I'm good. Thanks for having the interview. First of all, we're not a country band. We're a rock band with a little bit of influence from country. I like George Strait and Pat Green and So our music is like a mutt of rock. If you ever go to like one of those SPCAs or you rescue dogs, I think every form of music now is a mutt. I definitely don't like the electronic stuff, the all that stuff. Our stuff is probably most closely compared to great artists like Jack Johnson, Jason Mraz, Ben Harper, Dave Matthews, OAR, John Mayer, whatever that kind of rock is. Because that there's no title on that rock, and I actually hope iTunes will accept this genre. I call people like, what kind of music do you play? I say, it's called awesome rock. So that's just the genre I've stuck with. But appreciate you having me, man, and we got a good mutual friend in Donnetta.
Oh, yeah. Well, thanks for clearing me up on that. I heard a lot of country there. The old rock critic in me heard a lot of country, but I could definitely hear some jam bands, some Matthews. So I'm comfortable with that.
All right. Well, you heard one song. That's Home Sweet Home. I am from Alabama. I'm the only front man that I know that wears seersuckers on stage every night, so I am proud to be from the South. And so with that, I will have a little twang in some of my songs.
There you go. Well, Ray, I want to tell your story in segments. So let's start by talking about your original goal, playing basketball. Tell folks a little bit about your commitment to the sport as a young man.
Ever since I was in diapers, I think I was shooting ball either on one of those 2-foot courts in living room or on the driveway. And fast forward to my senior year in high school, I was all-state point guard, and I always had a dream to play in the big time, SEC or ACC, but just didn't have the offers. So I walked on at the University of Alabama and earned a little money and playing time there. And I got my degree in marketing in the business school. I was raised by a good conservative Southern family that taught me to use sports to always seek your dream, but have that safe plan B, which I think anybody that goes to college and has a passion for whatever their niche is, be it liberal arts or communication or marketing or something, that can be your plan B. You can chase your dream. So I tried out for the NBA at a college. I didn't make it, so I was lucky to have that degree and being able to fall back on plan B. So I worked in the real estate market in marketing and finance for 3 years and just kept playing, and then just got a chance with the Mavericks and was at the right place at the right time. I don't know how much Cliff Notes version you want to give me, but my first dream in my life was always to play professional basketball. But I was taught by my folks, it's great to chase your dreams, but have that plan B, in case it doesn't work out either, when you want it to or something like that. So,
well, and the amazing thing about your story to that point was that, out of high school, you didn't get the basketball scholarship you might have liked, but you got the walk-on out of there. You got out of college, you had 3 years where you were not playing, at that level, but you kept playing, and then you got this three-on-three opportunity, a three-on-three tournament. That shouldn't really lead to the NBA, right?
No, not really. I think for 99.99% of people, it does not. Rather leads to some turned ankles. But the Mavericks are pretty proactive on the way they do PR, and at that time, Bob, it was the American Airlines Center was just built, and so they were trying to put some scouts out there, get something in the paper about the AAC and the Maverick scouts being nice enough to invite some folks to this open tryout. And Mark's kind of had an open mind ever since I met him about his business stuff, about how to do tickets. Man, the Mavericks games are so fun. It's like a Vegas event. There's something going on at all times. Obviously, there's PG rated. Girls keep their tops on. I didn't want to, that was kind of going somewhere with that. Just want to clear it up. Had a few radio interviews that went astray. With that, and you mentioned you're like, you're in the real estate business and not really playing with that level of play. But ironically, I didn't know it, Bob, but I was. I was getting guarded by Thomas Everett, Michael Irvin, and Deion Sanders, which those are all ex-Dallas Cowboys, on a four times a week basis. We all went to the same health club and played pickup ball. So when those guys tell you, they call me White Chocolate, I think mainly because they didn't remember my name. That was like the default nickname. Hey, White Chocolate, you ought to go overseas and play basketball, man. You can always be in real estate. And so it kind of stuck in my head. And so when we were playing this Hoop It Up tournament and I was hearing and seeing these scouts there, I was like, all right, well, worst case scenario, they invite me down there to the tryout, maybe I can meet some of the players and do the loan on their house, because I was a mortgage banker at the time. And I And I was also a season ticket holder. I have to be the only season ticket holder to ever make an NBA team, I think. And so I really went in there with a little light attitude, a smile, and just kind of an attaboy spirit, and saying, "Hey, you know, let's have fun here. We'll meet some new. Maybe Derek will come over and give me some shoes or say what's up, and maybe I can do their loan." But I think in life, and you can probably echo this, since you're obviously very good at your job, when you're loose and you're relaxed and you're prepared, and you got to have some talent. But right place, right time, combined with that, you know, looseness, and you've already put your work in, you know, there's a good chance you're going to be very successful at that job. You know, be it in a boardroom trying to do a development, or making a U.S. World Cup team. I know they played a couple nights ago. A couple of those guys are trying to make that squad. So I just was so relaxed. It was the most relaxed I'd ever been. And I really was telling people, like, "Hey, I'm Ray Johnson. I'm season ticket holder, section 106, you know, row M." They're like, "Okay, good to meet you, Ray." I'm like, "What is this?" I've always been really goofy. I mean, I was quoting Ron Burgundy on the court at the time, probably during my game. I tend to sing when I play basketball. I've just kind of always been out there. So with that loose spirit, I got fortunate.
And so you play in this 3-on-3. They like you. A month goes by. You're playing, I think, summer league with them.
And just
right?
For the listeners and for you, that a lot of people don't know what summer league is. It's every NBA team has a summer league team. It's made up of the 2 to 4 draft picks that team has just drafted, you know, in the June draft. And it's made up of all the first and second year contracted players. And then they pick up like 3 to 5 free agents. I was under the classification of free agent. To me, I interpreted that word as you got your chance, go to work. You know, free agent, even if you don't make that team, Bob, you can, you know, at the time, the Clippers were looking for a guy kind of in my position, which I'm glad that didn't happen. the Nets, which I'm glad that didn't happen. You know, so even if you don't make that respective team, you're on their summer team for, you're in front of all the eyeballs for the scouts of all the other teams. And, you know, the plan B, if you can't make it in the NBA, is you can go to Europe. And if you're smart in Europe, you can do your taxes to your advantage in a legal way. And you can end up carving out quite a career to play some professional ball. And I was getting offers at the European level. I was going to get invited back to vet camp with the Mavericks, but they were looking at Darrell Armstrong at that time real heavy. So I knew my chances were tough with the Mavericks, but I knew the chances for my relationships to last lifelong were 100%, just because I was born in the deep South, and my dad and mom always had people around them, just a real friendly family. And in the South, man, the South is just friendly folks. and so that was kind of – It's really cool. It kind of taught me a lot as a band leader, because I'm pretty much a point guard now on stage. Instead of a basketball and a playbook, I got a guitar and a set list.
Right.
And so it's very, very similar. It's such a joy.
Ray, I imagine that while you played at Alabama, some of the veteran Mavericks must have been a little wary of the route that you took to the NBA.
Yeah, they were, but things happen so quick in your training camp. And in summer league, they don't really have much time to do back check on you. All they do is look in the paper. It says Ray Johnston, number 2, Alabama. So if they see that you played at a D1 school, it pretty much earns you your keep. But you really earn your respect level in the practices and then off the court. Not a lot of people don't know this, because a lot of people, if you're not a professional athlete, it's easy to poke fun at the guys that can't save. You know, all these NBA players that are now in debt for $500,000 loans, and they get that in 2 weeks. But it was really cool I'm a relationship guy. I still scratch my head if someone doesn't like me. I'm like, how could he not like something about me? You know, I'm hilarious at least. As you can tell, I'm quite confident in my humor, or sarcastic. You be the judge. So all the guys, Bob, including the guys I beat out, all came up to me. You know, in basketball, you got 2 handshakes. You got the dap, which is where you know, do all the stuff, snap it off and all that. And I just call it the white boy Republican shake, which is just, you know, the good old George W. Bush standard handshake that we're used to. But they all came up to me with the standard handshake, and I'm like, "Hey, man, congrats, you earned it." And then you never get that in college. You know, it was a lot of egos in college, obviously me included. When you're 18 to 22, I think you're kind of going through that stage in life where you're a little bit insecure, so you try to boast about what you're doing good. But in the NBA, man, it's mutual respect. It's like a boardroom, except you're wearing sneakers and you get your Nikes on, which I loved. I always wore Nikes, and then all the the gear, the free equipment room gear is what I was, all my friends were like, dude, give me some of them practice shorts. So it was super good to see people look you in the eye and said, hey, man, you earned it. Good job. Best of luck. That means a lot. You know, because I definitely gave many of those in my life when I got beat out. And it was just, man, it was like chill bumps all over my body when Donnie Nelson looked me in the eye and said, hey, you earned it. Good job, Johnston. Your real estate office okay if you go play some games with us? I said, yes, sir. They'd be fine. If they weren't, I don't care. I'm going.
I'm sorry?
No, go ahead. I was just saying, I was just chasing my dream, and I finally got there.
Well, Ed, two quick questions. Then I want to play another clip from Road Diaries. How tall are you, and how long before, without giving away to folks who don't know the story, how long were you able to play in the Dallas uniform before something happened?
I was the exact same height and weight as Steve Nash for the Phoenix Suns. He's measured in at 6'3". He's really 6'2". Same for me. he had been about 5 pounds. I was 180 pounds at the time. I have a lot thicker hair than him. So Steve, if you're listening, sorry, I just called you out. He's a great dude, by the way. And so, yeah, I was 6'2", 180. And I was able to – oh, my bad, your other question. I was able to play 3 months with my dream from June of 2004 to August of 2004.
All right, now I'm going to play another clip. This is, again, from the new HDNet series, Ray Johnston Band, Road Diaries. And listen to this as we take Ray's story a little forward.
In a pickup game, he was kicked in the calf. The swelling wouldn't go down. He thought it was just something very ordinary. Went to the hospital.
He said, Mom, I had a little collision with a player where I hit my leg, and I'm okay. It's just kind of swelling up, and it doesn't seem to be getting any better.
And within a 24-hour period, he was on his back in a coma and almost bled to death.
They found out my body was 84% leukemic, and the doctors had to medically induce me into a coma to save me.
We had 26 doctors on our team, anywhere from several oncologists to cardiac doctors because his heart was going in and out of rhythm. We had infectious disease doctors. I mean, I could just go on and on and on. And a lot of them would just come in there and say, Mom, you know, it's one in a million that he's going to make it. And I would always say, well, he's the one.
He made it out. And what he did afterwards was he lived a life like no one. Like no one I've known.
So for people who are having trouble following that, just in case, Ray went from, he had 3 months in the NBA, he had this accident, and that put him in the hospital. He was found to have leukemia, 84%, I guess, in the body, just a shocking diagnosis, coma, and just an incredible twist of fate after what was an amazing, your life had already had this amazing twist. And I was thinking that most parents in your mother's situation would obviously put up a strong front for everyone around them, but be kind of dying a little bit inside as you see your child endure what she did.
Yeah, it was. We were so fortunate to have just an explosion of people at the hospital, which I think was, in the short term, it was frustrating for my mom, my dad, my stepmom, my sister, because, you know, you have to field, you want to be considerate to your friends and family and field all those concerns. But I think, Bob, in the long run, it was good. Just kind of like during the day, if you got nothing to do, you're probably higher percentage to get into some trouble or not be productive. Well, with all those people around, I think it showed my parents, who haven't spent a lot of time in Dallas and haven't met a lot of my Dallas friends, I think it showed them how blessed I was in this city to have such great people around me, all the way from my church to my work at the real estate office to the Mavericks to my buddies I played Texas Hold'em with, just you name it. And so all those people coming in, that was, helped a little bit. But anytime you're a parent and you see your son flatline twice, that's something that's going to be tough to live with the rest of your life. But in the end, the way my folks and my sister looked at it is it gave us just another reason to be thankful. And we all believe, we're all Christians, my family. And so when you're a Christian, you submit all and you surrender all, you believe that the Lord has this plan. Now, that's not to say I don't have a lot of questions when I get upstairs, But, I mean, it's really funny how it's worked out, because when I started this band, little did I know that the story that HD Nets does such a fine job of chronicling and putting in a docuseries is 100% authentic. We're not doing any of this crap with douchebag Spencer from the Hills and stupid scripts of snotty people. This is straight-up authentic life of someone that was dealt a crappy hand and had to make the best of it. And not only me, and I'm only 1% of this, the 99% else that you don't see is the family, friends, support, and sports background that helped me get through this. And so just kind of rounding out your answer here, it was awesome to have all those folks come in, and my mom got a routine down, everybody sign in and say positive things to me while I was sleeping for 2 months. Hell, the next thing I knew, I was in August playing Texas Hold'em in the hospital, and I woke up and Bush had just beat Kerry, and the Red Sox had finally won a World Series. So it was a trip, not to say the least.
And it's
awkward when I hear when my family brings that up, because that's something that no one wishes on any of their loved ones. When I have kids one day, I can't imagine being in that spot. But my mom, my stepmom, my sister, and my dad, we're all better people because of it. And we just, someone mentions that, we try to turn it right back around like a terrible segue in SportsCenter and try to think of something funny to say, you know.
Well, and that coma and that situation would have been just enough for a lifetime. But tell people how many times you've been in and out of remission since then.
Yeah, right. It's like the hat trick here. Well, I was in the hospital for 4.5 months, and I woke up. I was 180 pounds. I woke up and was losing some hair, and then I had to have 7 toes amputated. I had dialysis machine so much, Bob, that the leukemia kind of took a back seat to all the other symptoms that had come about. I had a lung disease called ARDS, which has a mortality rate of 50 to 70%, depending on what doctor you ask. And so we had to deal with all that, and then having the toes amputated, I was like, this sucks. I can't hoop anymore.
Yeah.
But my stepdad at the time was a college coach, and we had many dinner tables and discussions about how the transition from being a player to a coach is there if you want. And I've always had some coach in me. By the way, Bob, if my house phone dies, I'll call you right back on my cell phone. That's just a plan B.
No problem. More reality.
Yeah, right? There you go. It wouldn't be fun. So I'm now relapsed. To be honest, it's either 4 or 5 times. It's been so many times I don't remember. I've had leukemia now a total of 5 or 6 times. I've been in remission now, this stint, for about 4 months because of a clinical trial drug. So I'm in great hands right now, but, you know, I've achieved remission before, so it's a matter of staying there. So we got a little bit different strategy and a little bit different playbook to keep this remission on, and that pretty much is to stay on 4 weeks on, 4 weeks off chemo. And also I'm doing some alternative. Some people call it holistic. I mean, that's a terrible word. I call it just other therapy, like muscadine grape seed extract, a few other supplements I take. And my doctor knows about it and is fine with it. And, yeah, man, it's like a clinical trial rat over here.
Well, I want to jump ahead a little bit because otherwise we'll run out of time.
Yeah.
I've got another clip I want to play from Ray Johnson Band, Road Diaries. This is about the next big development in Ray's life, and this is when he decides he's going to start a band. So listen.
And Bob,
he can't continue his dream as an NBA player, but he's always had a passion in music, so he started a band.
I guess the first thing was I'd identify where I thought a music niche would work, genre-wise, and how many pieces, acoustic, full band, and then I'd kind of pursue it.
And then he started piecing together a band.
It's the closest thing I've had to basketball is so much emptiness in my heart after I knew I couldn't hoop at whatever level just because I love the game so much, and this is definitely the replacement, if not more.
I didn't know what to expect, and really I found out that they're a great live band. Really knocked me off my chair.
I wasn't sure if Ray was going to switch phones or not. Ray, you still there?
I'm here, so okay. I got my cell phone on my right ear. I'm like Drew Rosenhaus, the agent here. Do you want me to punch the one on this cell phone and hang up this landline?
Sure. Why don't you go ahead and do that, and I'll tell people about your website till you come back on the line. Okay. While Ray does that, he's called right back in. I was going to tell you folks, you can check out his website, which is Ray Johnston with a T, RayJohnstonBand.com, And let's bring Ray back on the line. Hey, Ray.
Hello, back here. Back here.
Right, you're right back. So how did the band come about? And just as curious, why videotape its creation?
Man, you phrased it a great way. It's kind of the why not factor. Someone asked me about a year ago. They're like, hey Ray, what's your 5-year goal? I'm like, to be breathing and smiling. Do you not know my history? And this is someone that knew me well. So when the doctor gave me my latest relapse, I've always played music, mostly kind of like once a month, just kind of get my fix on. And we had a good little cover thing going here in Dallas, where I just found a great saxophonist who's played all over the world. And he started giving me some confidence by his feedback. And the combination of the doctor about 18 months telling me, hey, it's back again. And then he said something that he's never said before. He kind of, in a roundabout way, said, if there's something in your life you kind of want to do, go to a place or spend some more time with your fam in Alabama or something else you want to try, this might be the right time. That afternoon, I went home and bought the URL, rayjohnstonband.com, and called who I thought were the best musicians in Dallas to make up this band. And that's, I guess, kind of a combination of some crappy news and, you know, I've always had an entrepreneur spirit in me, and I've always thought that it's pretty easy to attain that if you got talent around you. So, you able to hear me okay, Bob? That's kind of how it is.
Yeah. Well, where does Mark Cuban, the owner of the Dallas Mavericks, where does he fit into your story here? Because I imagine a lot of this wouldn't have happened without him.
That's a good point. Well, he tried out for our drums, and he quickly got cut, so we had to get him involved in some other place. And he's a strange dancer, so he couldn't be in the dance squad. No, Mark and I met when I moved to Dallas. I was a member of the Premier Club, so that's where our friendship started about 8 years ago, playing pickup ball against each other. And then I made the Mavericks, and Mark is one of the guys that chooses the new guys on the team. He's very hands-on with the team, great owner, awesome heart. A lot of people see, you know, the Cuban side that media wants to show, which is latestly his $100,000 fine, which, by the way, if you don't know it, he always matches his fine dollar by dollar to a charity. And so he says, I got a big mouth, at least until he's going to get some money because of it. But so Mark and I's friendship obviously improved and grew when I was with the Mavericks, and he came up to me in the weight room, I always remember this, and say, Ray, you know, it's a little different from playing pickup in the Premier Club. I said, yeah, Mark, I would agree with that statement. And so what happened, Bob, when I was, you know, remember I was telling you that day I decided to go forward with the band. Well, I sent Mark an email with those thoughts. And then about 2 weeks later, I followed that email up saying, Mark, I have your channel on my Dish Network, which is HDNet is a channel. It's on everybody's cable subscription. And I said, in my opinion, I think you could use some programming that can be viewed by the 18 to 35 demographic. And I said, and here's my vision, and you can take it, leave it, or what have you. And let me get to the end of the email. My last sentence to Mark said, you're 1-for-1 betting on me. Even if you go 1-for-2, that's one hell of a batting average. And so Mark's reply was, and about an hour later, with all of his producers copied, and he said, this is Ray. Here's a quick backdrop of the story. Here's what he's doing. Here's why I think this will be good for our network. Y'all storyboard it. Let's get together. A week later, it was a decision. The decision was made. And it's pretty much, the word authentic comes up a lot in our music, my story, and the television series. And boy, has that ever rang true. He's just done a great job of being a friend. And also kind of, I guess, a business partner, because obviously he had to approve a budget to do this show. And I tell you what, the HDNet producers, audio, cameramen, writers, editors have just become super good friends of me and the band. And we were kind of intimidated at first with the cameras being around for the first 2 days, but it's just been awesome. And I won't be surprised at all if they win a show. It hits on so many angles. It's so relevant. And I'm just so proud to call them friends as well.
Well, Ray, before we run out of time here, I want to play a little bit. I think the song is called Katie. You'll know it.
The song's about cougars. Worldwide cougars.
All right. Give a listen to this, and we'll come back and say goodbye to Ray in just a minute. This is the Ray Johnson Band.
Oh. baby, just the other day. Sun shining on a cloudy hay. With your full legs, brown hair, girl, then you turned around. You turned my frown upside down. She turns around, only to catch me standing there. We hugged it out without a care. Spent the rest of the school little crazy day, kissing her neck and in her early May. Oh, Katie, I know you'll remember me. We had a dance with smiling girls and had some fun. Oh, Katie, I will forever be the man on the side, but not your honey bun. On my way to meet her, maybe just a second time. Told my friend, old girl's a dime. I walked inside, wanted to see a bunch of toys. Found out she's got two boys. And I went upstairs into her bedroom. With shag carpet, silk sheets on a full moon. Feeling kinda nervous on this second day. My friends warned me, boy, you're just cougar bait. Oh, Katie, I know you'll remember me.